To appease popular demand, this is a highly edited version of this month's podcast. If you enjoy what you hear and want even more conversation with our guest, as well as additional special features, please download the multi-part version.
Hello, this is writer-director Christopher R. Mim, the guy who is the namesake of the Mimiverse, of which the Mimiverse Bonfire podcast is named after. Yes? Yes. I make movies, I write, I direct, I do a bunch of stuff, but I also write bad poetry. So here goes, my haiku. Doesn't have a name, it's just a haiku. Monsters are my thing. Giant spider is the next. It eats some people.
You're about to enter into a world where all those classic movie monsters are still alive. A time when scary movies were fun for the whole family. And a place where the only colors you'll find are black, white, and shades of gray. Welcome to the Mimiverse.
Oh, she's the cat's meow.
What if she stole my pants?
No crackle noise this time, because we're not outside, guys.
It's cold.
Welcome to another edition of the Mimiverse Bonfire Podcast. I'm your host, Hater. With me, as always, the loving, trusting... I have no idea where I'm going with this.
Where are you going with this?
Ruby.
Do you have something to get off your chest, Mark?
No. I'm not in trouble for anything.
Are you projecting something?
No.
He wants to tell us
a
something
chest
important.
That is much smaller than the last time I saw it. No,
why, thank you,
true, sir.
You're
losing the moobs.
Where do you go from there?
We can take that out.
Good night, everybody.
With us, as always, is the namesake.
This guy.
That guy.
The
guy with the name, you with the face, and the name.
Christopher R. Mim, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
Babe, why don't you go ahead and introduce all of the gallery that we have with us, starting with our guest.
Wait.
I got to say one thing.
Yes.
The Mimiverse Bonfire Podcast is recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Indeed it is tonight, and it's not going to devolve into some weird old year-end wrap-up or nothing.
Maybe. As far as you know.
Yeah. Chris
ding
and I have been talking.
I got my phone out.
Yeah.
Put the phone away.
Tori's already here.
I will take the phone.
Mitch?
You know, I have a quick interrupting question.
Go ahead.
Does your audience know where each month's podcast is recorded?
Oh, I haven't actually said that yet.
No, not
Thank
always.
You. We are back at our house this month.
Can you give out the address so people can show up?
No.
It's a very, very, very fine house with two cats and a yard.
In the middle of the street.
We were. Today is Friday, October 5th.
Well done, Paul.
And we were originally going to do this outside, but the...
Were we going to introduce the people in the gallery?
No, Mark likes to talk.
I mean, this is still prelude and precursor.
Yes.
I think so.
See,
this is
the thing. We were going to do this outside, but the weather today was too cold and, more importantly, too windy.
And yeah, we will talk about this a little bit because I think it's kind of funny.
As much as I'm looking California, I'm definitely feeling Minnesota.
So, people with us, our studio audience consists of...
I'm not talking about the studio audience yet. The first voice you heard that wasn't one of ours... is our friend Doug Sidney, powerfully attractive. He's here. He's here. He's here.
Our guest.
He's our guest.
I'm flattered already. Sorry. Thank you. Sorry that guest. I spoke out of turn.
No. Dr. Collins is in the hizzy.
He's in the hizzy. What's up? Our candle tender, who was more than willing to be our fire tender outside. Ooh. He was dressed for success.
We filmed Moon Zombies through that awful winter.
Yes, we did.
Oh,
yes,
God. Did. Yeah, the
and
winter
had
everyone
zero
got sick.
Shoot days postponed because of snow.
Because of
16 shoot days postponed because of illness.
Illness.
Zero because of snow.
Nice memory, Doug.
Well done. Good. See, that's why we have you guys on, because you remember stuff. We showed up at Chris's house, which is approximately 7.5 minutes from here.
Yep.
Showed up, we built things, we went home, we showed up, we built things, we went home, we came back 4 days later, ripped it down, built some more stuff. We had a different experience of that movie.
Yeah, that movie, toward the end, I was ready to just kill myself. I was
have
so
you
sick
revealed,
of it.
Have you revealed on in newsletter or on podcast what your first act upon wrapping our last scene of our last shoot day was?
For Moon Zombies.
Yes.
I don't know. I think I did. I think when I...
You can do it again.
I think were you there, Mark?
I think I was.
I think it was there. Actually, it was the final night.
It was a 12-hour Saturday.
We did a 12-hour Saturday because we were going to split it up and then just decided, screw it, we have the time, we're all here, let's just get
just
it done.
Just bang it out tonight. No, I was not there because I was here.
We went
we had a party that night.
12 straight hours. 12 straight hours, not that. Last one, when I yelled cut, I put my fist through one of the walls.
Yes. and let me
because
say for the record,
could.
it was a very productive and I thought went well, a shoot day that went really well.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It was that much that had just, it was... As you said, and you know 9 times over now, a very grueling shoot comparatively.
It really was.
You know,
it was just a lot of stuff, and it was, you know, we had to do all the sets, like you said, we did those sets, and then we were shooting, and it was like these long days and in these really tight quarters, and I think it was just one of those things. It was like I thought of doing it for some damn reason, because we had one of those just sort of false walls sitting in the middle of the room kind of thing. And it was, you know, just that light melamine, so it wasn't too bad. So I was like, you know, I'm going to punch through one of these bastards to accentuate my last cut.
And I remember you and I having a few conversations where you said, boy, this one needs to get done. Man,
I was
when
just,
I am done with this, and sure enough.
I was just ready. I mean, that was a long shoot. I mean, this one has been two, but it wasn't. The Giant Spider is by its very nature, isn't the same thing. It's like everything we're shooting is like we're here, we're doing all these different locations, different people. Like I keep saying, we barely even touch the main story, you know, because we're doing all this sort of peripheral crap that we've been doing since July.
Mm-hmm.
And we only now really started getting into the main storyline. And so it hasn't felt the same. Whereas Moon Zombies, you get a little stir crazy in those damn white walls every weekend for months.
They're
and months
different,
on
but it's
end.
The same walls. We laid it out differently, but it after a while, it didn't matter how the layout of it was. You're still surrounded by white walls.
Yeah,
and you both tell me, even though it, you know same area, every set design was challenging.
Yeah,
it seemed it because
it was
being there, you know, in that space. There was a lot going on, even though it was stark white, you know, and you're very good with lighting, Chris, so you can do a lot with minimal.
That's all
lighting.
Ruby.
That's
more
not in
her.
Moon Zombies.
Well, Moon Zombies, it
kudos
was us.
To you
we
as
just,
well.
We just taped stuff to the ceiling.
That's
but
true.
Yeah, I mean,
we just had to make sure
it was. And every time we did it, because, you know, we only had so much space, right? So when we're building these sets, we're like, okay, well, how do we make this stark white room look different than the last stark white room so you can tell, at least give the impression you're in a different room? Because, you know, otherwise it'd be like, ah, that's the same room. So we had to think of things every time. It's like, well, this is the Botany Bay. Throw a plant in the corner. Yay!
Yes.
Yeah. You know, or where we place the door or something. It was just little crap like that that was just frustrating.
But, and I was going to ask, I'll make a statement, then I'm going to ask you something. I remember I had so much fun with watching the film, you know, again, that night at the premiere.
Yeah.
And then again with friends and family, because I would always get so excited by saying, okay, look in the corner. That is the rocket that he uses at the beginning of the film that is shuttering through space. It's now set dressing in the back, you know, and
yeah,
you know,
found the fun stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. Or... if you look at that's a cardboard milk crate from you know, Schindler's or wherever you purchased it, and they'll look, oh yeah, you're right. And so all of a sudden, all these different, these neat set things that were there make sense to the audience, because they really were that you were making so much out of so little.
Yes, and they were cheap really pieces of junk that we found and glued to the walls. Yes.
That was the perfect. Fun part of it, though. We can show you the cat litter buckets that made the tables, if you like.
There you go. Yep. They were cat litter buckets we used for tables. Yep. It worked!
That melamine was seriously versatile. I mean, you could do a lot of crap with it.
One more item about set decorations.
Go ahead.
I swear to God, the props that you used on that film had a mind of their own, because they would never fall off when no one was down there. They would never fall off when we were on a break. They would never fall off while we were rehearsing. They would only fall off when we were rolling.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
There's all those pictures in Shannon's blooper reel.
Oh, boy.
All in the blooper reel. All of a sudden, the painting falls off, or the picture falls off, or the little set decoration over in the corner fell down. It's like, what the hell?
And I think you used one in the blooper reel, or you let us watch it, or we talked about it all. I'm not sure. Memory doesn't serve, you know, totally correctly. But there was one that obviously it was during a take, and it disassembled from the wall, but it didn't fall off. And it just swiveled a little, and then it went. So it was like...
That's in the blooper reel.
Yeah.
That's one, yeah.
Yeah.
We couldn't... You know,
is that
it
my
is,
communicator?
No. When we did the very first... You know, we did Shannon's Dr. Hackett's bedroom. Yeah. Was one of the first sets we did.
Yep. Yeah.
And we didn't know what to...
I remember
what would work to hang stuff on the walls.
Oh,
it was the dresser.
Well, and it was the those. Remember, she had those three photos
the flower
of
paintings.
Flowers, that were taken by Angelina Thompson, who did the costumes for us as well. We used some that weird double stick.
It's like
goo
Velcro tape
stuff.
Yep.
And we tried that, and it never worked. It wouldn't stick to the melamine.
And there should be a disclaimer on that packaging that says,
seriously, this will not work on shiny crap.
Or this tape works fantastically for 22 minutes.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's
this works until you call
it. Finite lifespan.
Yeah,
yes.
It's not like we were using, you know, proper theater lights that would warm the space up.
You know the funny thing about Doug, and it's not even funny. I actually had to look today. You have so almost
funny, huh?
More
not
IMDb
funny, huh?
credits than Mike Cook and Shannon McDonough.
Um,
you get a lot of stuff. It says something to your versatility, I think, because it's not just one kind of a thing. You seem to get offered a variety of different things.
It's a blessing. It keeps work very challenging and really fun. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because you know, you if you find an interest in film and you're able to do film work, you know, which is the case with me, I love it, and I felt very fortunate to be a part of all the, you know, the projects that I have here in Minneapolis. And right at the time where I really kind of wanted to try to see if I could do, you know, some different stuff, for stuff that, you know, I thought would be really kind of a little bit out there from what I'd done before and challenging for me, I met a group of filmmakers that they took a chance, or they saw me for certain things and said, hey, we want you to do this, or try and do this. And I sank my teeth into it as best I could, and I had a blast with it, and I ran with it, and it's been great. So
actually, I think this is actually a really good story. How did you mentioned sort of getting with filmmakers and, you know, doing different things. How in particular did you get in with The Verse?
I got into The Verse. I remember that. Now this is going to go. I don't know if we've ever talked about this or not, but my first summer giving my little acting thing a go was when you were casting for Monster Phantom Lake. I had an audition scheduled with you, and at the same time, I had auditioned for another film, which turned out to be the first feature film that I was able to work in. And I was cast in that, and I had looked ahead, and, you know, your shoot dates and their shoot dates coincided almost, you know, weekend for weekend.
Hmm.
And so I didn't even end up auditioning with you, which was a rookie mistake, as I now know, because had I known or been blessed with hindsight, I would have auditioned with you anyway.
Yeah.
Because as it turns out, you continued on to become a very prolific filmmaker, and so I wasn't.
And what happened to the other guy? Where's he?
Oh, now
just kidding.
He's
he got a lead in that one. He wouldn't have been the lead.
Everyone was a lead monster.
Then we'll fast forward to the premiere of your second feature.
My girlfriend at the time and I, Emily Fredenberg.
Emily Fredenberg, who is famous for...
Gorga. You asked Emily and I if we would be hosts for your premiere of It Came From Another World at the Heights Theater. But so I will say that Emily and I had a blast doing that. I greatly enjoyed it. For me, it was a great working experience, too, being in a hosting, interviewing capacity. Because there's a lot that goes on. And you know what? The biggest challenge for me was working the microphone back and forth. Okay, I'm talking now, and I'm going to ask you a question, and then I have to remember right away to give the mic as I'm gesturing.
You just want to keep it for yourself.
And there's some timing and thinking, additional thinking going on involved in that. You know that you wouldn't really realize. I remember this because I was awful at it. You know, people are talking, and I'm here, and all you're hearing is my breathing into the mic when people are giving their responses, and but it was really fun. I remember it was really hot.
Yes, it was. Really, so it was the hottest May. One we've done yeah. ever. It's like 100 and some degrees.
And then and this might be good if there are actors listening to the podcast.
They are.
I would imagine you can attest to this. I was very persistent with you
because
I wanted to work with you, and so I did the thing, and I'm doing bunny quotes right now. Kept in touch with you regularly, fairly regularly.
Yeah,
hopefully it wasn't,
Pretty much every time I announced a movie, it was always like, Doug, suddenly you get that email from Doug. Hey, man, you got any roles for me in this one?
And I wouldn't say that. I would, hey, how's it go? Hey, congrats on rolling into production with your next one. Just wanted to let you know I'm still here.
Still available.
Here in Minneapolis.
Just so you know, love to work with you at some point.
Give him some feedback so that he knows. Was he annoying?
No, but that's the thing is that actually, because he would do that, and I've said this many times, enthusiasm goes a long way with me, a lot farther than even sometimes talent. That's not saying you're not talented, but sometimes enthusiasm alone is almost enough.
When done tactfully and professionally.
When done right, exactly. Yeah. Because you want enthusiastic people. I mean, when you're in these low-budget movies, you're not getting paid, you need people who want to be there as opposed to people who are just like, I just want to get the hell out of here.
Right.
Well, and all actors are salesmen. And there are some super fucking annoying salesmen out there. Not actors,
and
but
some bad
salesmen.
Ones, too.
Well, and I'm thinking
and
of
an
example.
And it's good to know that
right.
you're not being annoying.
It is good. It is good to know. And
no,
and,
but to be said for you sort of quote-unquote bugging me, every time I'd make a movie, though, and I would sort of get a little nice email from him, I would always be like, ah, damn it, I got to get Doug in something at some point. And then when it came to Moon Zombies, I was like, I'm putting Doug in this. I don't care. He's going to be in it somewhere. I'm going to write a character, and as I write it, I know Doug's going to play it. That was it.
Isn't that awesome?
That's true. He told me that you were going to be in the film.
And then I worked with you, and I will never work with you again.
Yeah. Bum, bum.
It was horrible. Yes. Every second. What?
Did I show up to set too early every shoot day?
No. No, it's just that one time you were 2 hours late.
Work-related.
Work-related.
Uh-oh.
You could have called.
Dish.
You got the... I didn't want to say anything. There was an incident. I guess we'll call it an incident. Where Doug did... We were supposed to start at time, and he didn't show up. It was like 2 hours late, and we were just sort of sitting around. And I was kind of like, well, you know what? I'm not paying the guy, so as long as he shows up and we get it done, I'm not going to complain just because I know he's doing me the favor. And if it's a job, I'm not going to be like, you ass!
But
Shannon was not happy, was she?
Actors were sitting around.
She was upset, and, I'm not trying to blatantly cover my ass, but since we're talking about it, I got stuck at work. Was unable to call
paid work
the instant
that's why it was okay.
I was released from work and booked up and felt terrible.
At least she didn't have to do her hair for that one.
She was ready to knock me out and wring my neck. And of course, on that shoot day, that's the day when we had two kissing scenes, two loving, embracing, it's fiance and boyfriend and girlfriend becoming in. Do you remember that?
Yes.
To this day, I feel awful about it.
But again, it was like you were doing paid work to come do free work for me. So I didn't want to complain, but
you kept a fantastic perspective on it through its entirety, and
I just
remain grateful.
Anyone who's worked with me knows I just want to get the movie in the can.
Yeah,
that is whenever true. We do it. I mean, I'm always in this, like, so I hate antsy. This time of year when we're shooting and there's still like a month left. It's like I just want to get it all in the can and then I don't have to talk to anybody. It's no longer in anyone else's hands but mine.
Since Chris brought it up and we were talking about it before, we've mentioned on the podcast before that the shoot for Attack of the Moon Zombies went into February, almost Valentine's Day.
It was supposed to go to Valentine's Day, but it went to the 12th, because that's the one we pushed forward to get that one.
Yep. Since Attack of the Moon Zombies, Mim has specifically said, we are done. House of Ghosts was done before New Year's. Yeah. As it sits right now, fingers crossed, Giant Spider will be done before December 1st.
Done before Thanksgiving.
Before Thanksgiving.
I'm sorry, you're right. I forgot.
If we can pull it off. We got to stay on schedule.
There's no getting
sick.
It's because of Attack of the Moon Zombies, because we went so long into the next year.
Right.
He went through like a massive burnout phase, and you've talked about
it. Yeah, it's just, it was, pushing it that much.
We went
just
five months of shooting from September to February, and it was just grueling, and we were all feeling it.
And there was in my opinion, a very extenuating circumstance. One of, an integral cast member. There are no non-integral cast members, of course, but there was one of the actors became very sick.
Yeah, well,
he's very concerned.
We've talked about that.
Okay, there's nothing that can be done.
Yeah, the Mimiverse virus that ripped through the production starting, I think I started it. I really
do. Yeah, you did, actually.
Patient from, zero.
And that's what happens when you have a bunch of little kids in preschool and stuff.
We did not have that go for the House of Ghosts.
No, we got it before the big flu season started, so.
What flu season? It never snowed yet last year.
But that was it. I mean, people got sick and stuff got shuffled around, but we got it done. I learned very quickly that, especially when you have big stuff like that that has special effects, it has a lot of stuff going on for it, you just can't, you need the time. Because I was, and that was the thing that drove me nuts and why I got so burnt out with Moon Zombies in particular, is like, we had that big 12-hour day. And I was like, oh, yeah. And everyone was so excited. And everybody went home. And I'm like, yay, I have 3 straight months of work ahead of me to finish this bastard before the premiere. And it wasn't even 3. It was like 2. I had 2 months to get it done completely. And that meant DVD. I mean, that was the one I actually broke out in stress hives.
Yeah.
Because I was doing a convention in Lincoln on tax day, right? Yes. April 15th. And I had to have the DVD authored and in the hands of the replicator before I left for Lincoln. Okay? And I was doing, this is the first time I did the Esperanto audio track, right? And I did nothing but Esperanto stuff for 2 weeks straight. And it takes a long time. It takes a lot to do all that. And that was back before the Esperanto group and I sort of worked out the best way to do it. So, like, none of the audio matches up, whereas with House of Ghosts, it's almost perfect because they match syllables this time. Sure. So it, I don't know if it's even close script-wise, but... So I was, like, killing myself, and I literally started breaking out in stress hives trying to finish this damn thing. And that's the only time it's ever happened to me.
I can personally attest to the mad schedule you were on. I was working a couple closing nights, in my regular gig, where I was getting out of work at 3 a.m. on those nights. And I realized that's the best time to text Mim coordinate with him.
That's
because
absolutely
he's
correct.
Firing right back at 3:20, 3:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
And a couple times I was like, I wasn't trying to pry, but hey, what's up? What are you doing? Editing.
Pretty much.
Pretty
much. I do everything late in the night. He's now might be a time to take a break before we get into the actual Doug Cindy interview.
All right, we'll take a quick break.
And we're back.
Before about how Doug came into the Mimiverse, but what was the impetus for you to start acting in the first place?
Yes.
Great question. I grew up here in Minneapolis, and my mom got my sister and I. She got us both into modeling and such when we were little.
Fun.
And so we both did a little
against
of that.
Against your will?
My sister absolutely loved it.
Okay.
And truth be told, at that time, I absolutely hated it. Because what it meant for me was that I was
I was pulled inside from being out in the yard playing with my friends,
exactly,
playing football, and I had to stop playing with them
and get clean,
go inside,
and look pretty, right?
Clean up,
yeah,
have, you know, clean, put on these nice uncomfortable clothes, and then, like I said, I grew up in Burnsville, so we had to drive all the way into Minneapolis. My mom drove us in.
Oh, 20 minutes is forever when you're a kid.
And you go into these, you know, they used to be called cattle calls then and such, and you'd go and you'd sit and you'd do all these things that people would ask you to do, and there was so much smiling, smile more, smile, you know, all these things that I remember. So for me, but then I was able to be cast in a few things and had an absolute blast, because here it is, you're out of school all day, mom and dad says this is really important, this is going to be a lot of money for your college fund, and you show up and there are people pampering you every which way and left.
Nice.
And there's food everywhere, and you know what I mean. And so that was fun, but it was all this, you know, it was all this running to what were auditions and things like that. So my sister and I both did that.
Are we talking commercials or what are we talking here? Like
print ads, mostly print ads.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah. No, most of it was print then.
Okay.
And
anything Twin Cityans would have recognized you in?
A Sears, you know, catalog.
We dug. Well, it might have been Sears or J.C. Penney.
You know,
Target.
What? Yes, it was really neat. I do recall something specifically. This was when Target used to shoot all of their inserts, their Sunday inserts here in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, too, when I was six, I was chosen to be on and I thought this was so cool at the time, on a Tonka toy box.
Neat! Oh.
And
guaranteed two sales.
It was great.
Mom,
so I was
grandma.
On, I was, it was myself and this and this other young girl that they use, and we were just shown playing, and it was a 3-in-1. It was a car wash, it was a car wash, it was a gas station, and it was a parking ramp. And you
cool.
could just, you could, you know, they had all the pieces, you just rearrange them in a different way. And it was a 3-in-1 thing that Tonka launched for a certain, you know, Christmas season. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was really great. Another year I was on a full page Dayton's ad.
Ooh.
Remember Dayton's?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
For Father's Day, where it was myself and my dad, who was my dad for the day. We were both in the same, in matching suits.
Aww.
And it was raining, and he had an umbrella, and I was like checking for rain or something like that. And it was crazy because it was a full page thing. And I don't know if department stores still even do that, run those huge, you know, full page ads in the paper or whatever.
Probably not. It's probably too expensive.
I don't even get the paper.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Us onliners. Mm.
Yeah. So got to do that stuff, but I as soon as my parents said I didn't have to do it anymore, I was like, gone.
Nice.
Done. And interestingly enough, it wasn't until I was in graduate school, you know, many, many years ago, and I realized that my favorite pastime was watching films. And I would get deeply, deeply engrossed in films that resonated with me, that meant something to me. And I would think about them for days. And then when I got to a point where I was kind of finishing up graduate school, and I thought, you know, it was during the summer one time, and I was taking some summer classes, and I thought, there has to be something to this. So I did an internet search for acting agencies or acting classes, and just took a look at what came up. And I took the next step, and I went and visited them. And they had me read, and they said, "Yep, you know what? You'd be perfect to pay us a lot of money for a bunch of classes if you want to take some on camera acting classes." I was like, "Great, I'm going to do this." And I really was excited at the time, so I did, and I took a class, and I absolutely loved it. And so I took another one, and absolutely loved that. And I remember taking my favorite class. It was an improvisation class, and it was taught by an actor who still works here. He works. Mostly in theater, and it was the best class ever. I respected the hell out of this guy. He was so great at what he did. He was so great at conveying, you know, how things are done in a real, very real way. For whatever reasons, I just really connected with him. And it was so cool for me because I stayed in touch with him, and I started doing stuff, and I've been able to work with him a couple times since. His name is Michael Paul Levin.
Fun.
Great, great guy. Tremendous actor. And when I finished taking classes where I was, I had finished graduate school as well. And I thought, you know what, if I were ever going to try this, now would be the time. And so I did. And as beginner's luck would have it, I was cast in a few things. They were just, you know, a few extra roles here in a commercial. And I was cast in a short film that I was thrown a few speaking parts in the couple days of shooting. And I just absolutely loved everything about everything that had to do with being on set. And I loved the process. And I loved the challenge that it felt like to me. And again, I thought, you know what, there has to be something to this. And so I decided that for this one time, I was going to follow my heart and go with something that I didn't know what was going to happen with it, but I'm just going to do it and see what happens. And it's the best decision I've ever made in my life, because these 9 years that I've been doing it, I've been the happiest I've ever been. I've met some amazing people, and I've succeeded in some things, I feel like. I've failed in a lot of things, but it's constantly a challenge to me. And I answer the question that is posed by people in the business that are instructors or longtime veterans in the work. They say if there's anything else you can see yourself doing, go do it, because because it's a crazy sucks. Business, and you may never succeed. You may succeed only in little increments, or you may succeed beyond, you know, yours or anyone else's wildest expectations. But if you can't see yourself doing anything else, continue to do it. And my first true and realist dream, that ship has sailed, was, you know, to be a professional athlete. I got to be a professional athlete for 1 year. So I got to live that. But
What was it?
I played soccer my whole life.
Okay.
And I got to play with the Minnesota Thunder for a season.
Oh, here. Nice.
Even within, you know, following, I guess, listening to my instincts and going with this, in my work as well, I've hung tight to what my greatest interest is in this work. Minneapolis is a fantastic theater town.
That is true.
There
that
is
very true.
Very.
You can,
I mean,
work.
It is the third largest theater town in mm-hmm. the United States. Mm-hmm. It goes New York, Chicago, then us.
Yep.
Oh, nice.
I could have gained a tremendous amount of fantastic theater experience in the time that I've been acting, but what drew me to acting is my love of film. I love film.
Mm.
So
I hate it myself.
Yeah. on that statement, and when you started your story, and you said that, you know, as a youth, that you really liked film. As a youth, what was the first film or film series that grabbed your attention the most? I mean, what's your youngest memory of, like, oh man, this film, or this is awesome? What was your first favorite?
Boy, this is great.
Before
great
you answer that, mm-hmm. I have to commend you guys for finding an actual, like, fire tender who asks good questions.
I know.
Yeah.
Well done, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah. And it is. Just because of where this particular actor has gone in his career and what the world thinks of him now, what I think of him now, but Tom Cruise's role in Jerry Maguire did something for me in 1996. I was graduating college, and
it just did it for you.
Just, I mean, I love the story. I love the story and the way it was told. And
he wanted
and,
him to show him his
and
money.
And you know what? Regardless of how dated the film is now.
You know, That's about real football.
Isn't he terrible?
Wow.
He's the worst.
Yeah.
Derailer.
You can punch him in the shoulder.
He is a
anger.
Derailer.
I still it towards the opposition.
No, but I mean, talk about a screenplay that is written around a very stereotypical character arc. I mean, that character arcs in the movie.
Yeah.
And at the time, I thought he did a great job with it, and, you know, yada, blah, blah, blah. But that was... You know, and since then, I have my favorites, movies that just, like, you know, but it was the Wonder Years, and then, you know, later on, the film. I feel like I'm almost embarrassing myself, but I still use a monologue from Jerry Maguire that I like it.
Looking back at Attack of the Moon Zombies. Were you proud of what you did? Were you proud of your performance? Let's question it.
First and foremost, I was so proud to be a part of that film.
Until you saw the final product.
Now he doesn't talk about it even to his parents.
My parents have seen it.
Yay.
Did they like it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. They, yes, very much. They loved it. And I am very proud of how the film turned out. And yeah, I was really, the challenge for me with, you know, we were talking about how I find, you know, this work so challenging always, in a really good way. The challenge for me was, do I have it in me to be able to portray a 50s or, you know, as it were, a 70s character? Because there, you know, there's a little bit of a different vibe. Mm-hmm. And it's really funny the way it happened, because as we shot it, I just went with my instincts, which is all I think we can do, and, you know, trust our instincts, go with them. And I think that's how a truest performance, you know, comes to fruition. That's just my personal philosophy. But as it turned out, how I ended up portraying the character was, I think what most stands out, and I, you know, other people may think differently, what I think most stands out about Phil Collins in the movie is not so much what he says or not so much what he does, but the way he reacts, his reactions to things. And you asked me what I was most proud of. I was most proud of how it seems as though a lot of those reactions could fit into the genre of where the film is. Do you know? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Hey, I have some questions I just got via text messaging.
Well, all right.
It's this new technology on these phones.
You get them newfangled
it's
things.
It's from someone you know, Stephanie, my wife, who you met. She has two questions. And since she's texting in questions, we'll ask them. She asks, have you ever played a villain? And would you like to play one in one of my films?
I have played a villain before. I greatly enjoyed it. And I would love to play a villain in one of your films.
Okay, quick and succinct answer. The second...
He was not ready because now there's a bit of honey in his mouth.
I figured you'd go
he
on.
He probably my shortest answer to anything tonight.
Was that in harm's way? Or
yes,
is that...
audience, I am capable
We're
of a
We're
going
short 5 hours tonight, ladies.
Oh, here's the other one. And this one, I think a lot of people are actually wondering.
Okay.
How did you, Doug Sidney, but more generally your character, Phil Collins, how did you manage to get your hair cut while running down the hall from Killer Plant Zombies?
We got that from two different people.
Oof. Oof. I think anyone that has seen anything I've done or has seen me in real life, they all know I have awful hair. So trying to keep this this mop that I have, boy, so I failed a continuity there.
There is one scene that it's blatant. It's blatant in only one particular instance of the film, and it's when you're running... spoilers, if you haven't seen Moon Zombies, you suck. Why are you listening to Doug's podcast?
Yeah, no joke. Thanks for listening, Emily.
How'd that feel? Good? You know, and I've seen it a number of times, and if we're talking about my character, my appearance and continuity, I mostly notice, and maybe no one else noticed, but I'm going to out myself here. My sideburns tended to
shift a little.
I
think it's charming.
Fail.
As Chris always says, there's no continuity errors in these films.
Right.
There are none.
There's no continuity.
Right.
Shannon's wig doesn't change length.
No.
Sometimes you can see the back of her hair. No.
Anthony's bow tie changes size.
Yeah.
So those are the questions that I get.
We almost always
have everyone's
hair.
Well, those are just two
from
Steph that you can think of. So we got a whole list more that we haven't even gotten to.
One of the things that Doug and I were talking about before you got here, Chris, was that... as a guy who's been able to go to conventions a lot with you, especially this year, 2012, the year of the convention for the Mimiverse, for crying out loud. One of the things that I notice, and when we go to conventions, we always set up a little TV that has a DVD that you made that has all the trailers. And then a scene from that movie kind of set up. And what would happen is if... somebody was walking by the table and somebody in the Attack of the Moon Zombies trailer happened to be on, they'd always stop and watch.
Yes. I went through the first 1,000 run of Moon Zombies faster than any other title.
Why do you think that might be?
I don't know.
It's all you, man. It's all you.
No, I mean, it's a very good movie. It's got a great cover. It's got a great title. A lot of times when people are just buying them, you know, sight unseen, it's always The Monster, Phantom Lake, and Attack of the Moon Zombies. And now House of Ghosts is catching up because people get House of Ghosts.
Right.
That Yeah, there's something about it. People get it. They say, oh, House of Ghosts. And the moment you say, oh, yeah, it's William Castle-esque, they buy it. A lot of times. They're like, oh, I love William Castle. I want it.
Sure.
So, but Attack of the Moon Zombies, The Monster, Phantom, like, they're, like, great title.
So, but, I mean, it does have its own charm, and people are just sucked into that movie. And I love it. It's my second favorite film in the entire verse.
Hmm.
What's your first?
Monster.
Wow.
Today.
Till you see the giant spider. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm stoked.
It's that good.
I just gotta say, I'm stoked. I'm not in any MIM films. I'm just a rabid fan. I'm glad to be here, but I'm stoked to see it.
Happy to have you, sir.
Because all the time that I've been seeing MIM films, Terror from Beneath the Earth being my first, I saw the style he was going for. I'm like, he's still got to do one of those films where, you know, they make some lizard or something look huge. And then I heard he's doing, you know, the giant spider. I'm like, so gonna be awesome.
It's turning out really good. That's another reason I'm like really. You can ask anybody who's been like, especially these guys who've been helping me out. I'm so nervous.
Mm-hmm. It's like, coming out great.
It's like everything is so great. I want to finish this one more than I've ever wanted to finish a movie.
And we'll
next
be done
to Moon Zombies, but that was just burnout. Whereas this one, it's like I have to finish
excitement
this movie.
Versus, yeah.
It's yeah. so exactly.
You know, we'll be done before Thanksgiving. Yeah,
I would like to challenge Paul to put his money where his mouth is.
Oh, when did come?
Associate producer on SaintEuphoria.com.
So, becoming an associate producer, what does that do for a person?
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah.
An associate producer gets their name in the credits.
Are you serious?
Really?
Oh, my God.
For all time, right there. It'll probably get you an IMDb credit as well. You get five copies of the DVD.
Wait.
You're five?
Five copies of the DVD.
I mean, you're spending...
For my own.
You're spending $55, yes? I mean, that's what you're going to spend on buying those DVDs alone. Plus, you get two tickets to the premiere, which... That's the only way we're going to...
I've been buying tickets, you know, all these years, and then now I just get them...
You just get them for free!
Oh, my God.
Plus, you get a signed certificate with your name proving that you were, yes, in fact...
Did you sign it?
Did you sign it? It looks just like that.
Yeah, see? Audio medium.
You know what?
It looks like that.
You know what, Christopher?
It looks like that, too.
Just shut up and take my money.
Okay!
Here you go!
And that's how easy it is. Paul, we haven't said your last name. Do you want us to not say it?
I don't care.
Look for Paul in the credits. Paul Hansen, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Paul Hansen. His name.
Wait.
What would you like your on-screen credit to read?
Go back and you do the shake.
Whatever you want.
We'll put it on the face.
Oh, yeah. We got it. Okay.
So this really happened.
Even though
today,
you're listening
folks.
On audio, we have to get this on video.
Yes.
There you go. You got to be holding the
Wait, no. Get Doug in there, too.
That's right. Wait. You're covering up Doug. One, two, three. Nice!
Thank you.
Nice.
Oh,
yeah.
Now I can buy some more.
Oh, my God. Where's mine? What the heck?
Should we jump into the...
Thank you, Paul.
You got to bleep out the word so it's like, buy some more what? What did he say that they're laughing at?
Now I have to bleep it twice, you jerk.
Oh, actually, I can just edit that whole thing out where I tell you what to do.
We're going to move into another traditional segment. Not yours. We're going to play our intro music right now.
We have just discovered an important note from space.
Welcome to Peter Flynn's Corner.
Question number one. Which Mimiverse feature best expresses the human condition?
Well done,
Peter. Let me
take
a second. You know what? I have a couple. Can I answer in a couple parts?
You
yes,
can.
Yes,
he asks questions in multiple parts.
What's coming to mind when I think of a really solid glimpse into the human condition in the Mimiverse, I think of Josh's role in Destination Outer Space, because you are focusing on a character surviving his way through isolation and frustration and abandonment and all these challenging life obstacles that he must face on his own in this space vessel.
Hmm.
There's a glimpse into the human condition right there. And I also think it's been a long time since I've seen it, but it came from another world. The character of Michael,
Mike Mason.
Yes.
Dr. Fraser.
Uh-huh. Dr. Fraser.
What happens with him? As well, that's a human condition tale there too, because he's things are happening with him, and he you know what I mean?
When yeah, oh yeah, no, no. Part two of that same question: which one is the least?
The film that's the least about the human condition.
Say House of Ghosts because you haven't seen it.
Yeah, I could say. I could say that.
I'm teasing.
You know, it's such a thematic question. Of course, it's easier to have a really wrong answer, but I would say possibly I'm going to go with the Monster of Phantom Lake, because you have so many characters who are integral component of the story. You have your professor, and you have his very interested student, and then you have our teenagers. And they're at such a young point in their lives where they're, you know, you almost get the sense that their consciousness is a lot lower, because of the place in life that they are, and they're so unknowing about the monster.
Can we make Doug a permanent guest?
I know.
Yes. Good.
You almost. Oh, thank you. Thank you. That feels great to hear.
The next
17
podcasts are going to be Paul Hansen as our fire / candle tender and Doug Sidney. Let's ask an acting question this time around.
All right.
Based on Phil Collins, how much time did you spend thinking and developing your character's backstory? Is he a real doctor? And if so, I have this funny pain in my shoulder. Can you take a look at it?
Mark, to answer your question, not a fucking second, because I spent all my time trying to get my damn dialogue down.
So you don't go ahead and make backstories up, even if there isn't.
No, I was kidding. Did I make a backstory? You know, Chris does a great job of exposition in his films and setting his characters.
Sometimes too good of a job, yeah. If you know what I'm saying.
In the films, and so my focus became
your facial expressions.
Really well, you know what? It
Don't
a
put
lot
words
of
in his mouth.
Most of my work occurred after our first. I don't know if we shot in a 1-2 chunk. First go for me or not. I think it was 2 days in a row, two short nights in a row.
Yeah.
When I first started, the majority of my work happened that I did on my own after those 2 days, because I really to do any real effective work, I needed to be there and be in those shoes for the first time and see, you know, what it really felt like and what it was and what was expected of me, I guess. And then take that and go back and say, okay, how can I sort of zero in on this? And I think what it became was being, and this is how I saw it too, and it may not play out like this in the film, but being first and foremost a partner to this other character, because I was a fiance that was looked up to, and also I was a leader on, you know, in this core of characters. And so it was me being first the role of, ironically, of, you know, the fiance of Dr. Hackett, and then the role of Dr. Collins. And I would have never guessed that would have been the case, but after those first 2 days of shooting, that's what I kind of realized in my head, sort of unconsciously even. And the scene that we shot, Chris, with Dr. Edwards in the bedroom when we bring his gifts in,
yes.
And he has a little nip and all these things. neat things that we did, it became him as much reacting and sort of demonstrating who he was and his position nonverbally, yes, as much as verbally. That's when I was like, okay, you know what? I think that's kind of what's going on. Yeah. Does that make sense?
That does, okay. Actually. All right. Ruby's favorite segment of the show, and then we're going to take another break.
Mm-hmm.
The name of that segment, my friend, this is just you.
Okay.
It's called 30 Seconds at Random.
Okay.
Bum, bum.
This is 30 seconds, rapid-fire questions.
Okay. And
so
I need
alternate questions back and forth. You need to answer questions quickly.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. And after we are done, we shall never speak of these things again. Are you emotionally ready for 30 Seconds of Random?
I am.
Excellent. Then we shall begin in 3, 2, 1. We are roughly the same age. Did you have a pair of kangaroo shoes?
I never did.
Brownies, frosting or none?
Frosting.
Live long and prosper, or may the force be with you.
Live long and prosper.
Please recite the top row of the periodic table.
Hydrogen, oxygen, carbon, tin,
I'm sorry,
boron.
We're done. We shall never speak of these things again. Thank you for playing 30 seconds of random.
This is the worst one ever.
We shall never speak of these things again.
We're going to take a break.
And we're back.
We're back. We're back. That was a good idea.
Now we're back, Doug.
Scooby-Doo.
I've gotten a couple of textual messages from a Mr. Mitchell A. Gonzalez.
What's that? Mitch Gonzalez?
Mitch Gonzalez.
Yes. Hey, it must be raining.
Hey. Mitch Gonzalez. Well, it's snowing. That's
first
sort
off,
of frozen rain.
He says, Doug, hello, it's been too long. Second.
Hello, sir, it has.
He says, he has two questions. One is pertinent to, you know, your career as a film actor and whatnot. And the other is kind of for fun. The first one is the important one.
Okay.
It's Booberry or Frankenberry?
Boo.
Okay. Now this one is just for fun. How hard was it adjusting to making a retro 50s movie? Did you have to approach making Moon Zombies differently than, say, a modern film?
I'm going to say yes, because I wanted to be a good fit for the character, for the film, into your universe. So I, you know, this sort of harks back to what we were talking about before. I didn't know completely what to expect, and as I'm thinking about it now, I remember before my first day of shooting, I wanted to show up an hour early so we could talk about things.
Yes.
Do you remember
that? I do.
And we talked about things for about 5 minutes.
Didn't we also worry about your shoes too?
Yeah,
or
we spent more time worrying
things
about my shoes.
What?
And we should have I should have spent even more time worrying about my hair and sideburns, as it turns out. But I recall you had a very eloquent and succinct way to sort of sum up, you know, who he is and where he's at in the story.
You remember what I said? Because I don't.
Yeah, you said he's basically just a guy, because you know he's a fiance and he's a doctor. And he's a team leader on this ship. But, you know, sort of the undercurrent is that he's basically a guy that's thrust into this crazy situation. He's, you know, he's a leader, and he's trying to be a figure, the man of the household, if you will, on this ship with this team and with his fiance. And I just kind of went with that. And, you know, and then you said, too, you just kind of blew it off, and you're like, you'll be fine. You know, we'll set it up,
like
you'll Chris. Do it.
That sounds like me, doesn't it?
And really, I mean, yeah, I think for all of us
I think
know
what
Chris, he really did. That's what he said.
I think it was probably I said, you fine.
You
that's,
fine.
That's the ongoing joke.
Chris is a very laid-back director. If you're doing something wrong, he'll tell you. But for the most part, he just kind of lets you do your thing.
Well, and I've said that, you know, and I say it repeatedly when actors come up and say, okay, well, what do you think? A lot of times I'm like, well, what do you think? I mean, how do you see it? Because I don't know. I don't feel like I want to be that guy who's telling you exactly how to say everything at every moment. And no, it's not perfect.
You're not
a lot of times
those...
I feel like I want to give actors. I mean, that's part of what you do, and that's part of your job to do.
Yeah,
is like I want to know what you think and how you interpret it and how something comes out. And if I absolutely just hate it, I'll say something. And sometimes I'm like, you know what? That's better than I thought it was, than I imagined it would be. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to let them do it.
Mm-hmm.
And things change. I mean, there have been a lot of characters that I feel like I wrote them as like one note, purposely wrote them as one note, whatever, and then an actor takes it, and suddenly it's like, wow, they brought some of that I never imagined.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I like that. That's where I feel the collaboration. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is that I don't want to be... I mean, it's always kind of a joke that I lord it over people. You must get the dialogue perfectly.
Well, and this is, I was just going to go here. And I have to say that this is the first film that I've worked on where the script that's written and the script that is rehearsed and the script that is shot and what is used, it remained the same throughout. Because invariably, from my experience, you know, on a film set, on you know, from script to production to what is finally you know used and cut, things change. Because part of everyone's responsibility on a film set is to be in the moment and to be open to make to using, you know, ultimately what works best. And this is the only project to date that what was written on that page remained what was, you know, it wasn't changed, and that's what was said, and that's what was shot. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that is a tribute to your writing. And that was, to be honest with you, an extremely comforting place to exist throughout a long shoot. Because you know that, you know, after we shot 3-4 days, you sort of embody the character. You're used to being in it, in his, you know, for me, in his skin. And then it literally becomes a matter of being ready to go mentally and physically and being memorized. Boom. Get in there and do it. You know, because you know that your actors opposite you, their stuff's not going to change because that's the way you write. And it's the only film I've been a part of that it's...
So is that nice from an actor's perspective that, in essence, you don't have to be on your toes for reacting to ad-libs and stuff like that?
It depends who you ask. For me, I loved it.
Oh, okay. Because I know some actors, it drives them nuts.
This is coming from an actor who takes extreme liberties with script because I feel that it is my duty to have the balls to... Make it a character's own,
such language.
And to be able to say to a director, a DP, or whatever, how about this? Is this working? It feels right. Is this working? You know,
it's a good answer. But in the future, I'd appreciate if you watch your f-ing language.
Apologies.
We've got some questions here on the Bonfire podcast page. Bob Arndt, you may remember him. He was Dr. Banks in Attack of the Moon Zombies.
Yeah.
I might have asked him during the Attack of the Moon Zombies premiere, but when he first met me as Dr. Banks, did he think I was a real douchebag, or did he realize I was just in character? Apparently he's concerned whether or not you like him.
I didn't think he was a douchebag at all.
There you go. Answers that question.
Pimp yourself.
Can you talk about any upcoming projects that you've got? And obviously, there's an audience for what you do, so please.
Thank you. What a nice segment. Much appreciated. I have a film premiering that I worked on from Divini Pictures and Restraining Hollywood called Problem Solving the Republic. It's a political comedy. Excuse me. It's a political comedy. Very timely. Mm-hmm. It's premiering as part of the Twin Cities Film Fest.
Oh, nice.
So that's premiering on the 19th. It's a feature. I got to play a fantastic character. I actually got to play a political villain, if you will, in the film.
I've seen it online. I've seen the trailer.
Okay. Isn't that kind of redundant?
Super fun.
A little bit.
Nice.
Okay. If you're interested in checking the film out more, there's a website at rescuethetaxpayer.com. Ooh. And how neat is it that... Elliot and his post-production team also created a website for the character that I portray in the film.
at pansyforpresident.com. The name of my character is Dick Pansy, P-A-N-Z-Y, so Pansy for President. It's a fun little website. It's funny. Screenings. There's going to be another one in November, yet to be announced, and another one in December, also date yet to be announced. Cool. But there will be two more.
Okay, good.
Good. September shot a Halloween fan film. It's a fan film contest on the website HalloweenMovies.com. The name of the film is Halloween Boogeyman, so it's Halloween colon
Boogeyman.
Boogeyman.
Nice.
And Brent and I are both Halloween geeks, so we had so much fun doing this. And he just nailed this fan film. It pays wonderful homage to the original and the, you know, part two. I'm playing it's a short film called The Accused. The character's name is Graves the Gravedigger, and he essentially flipped the switch on prisoners on death row, and he's being put on trial. And his morality is being called into question, his morality as a person. So it's a really neat and well-written courtroom short. Yeah.
That's awesome.
A lot of great stuff coming up.
Thank you.
With all that, I've been the social media reiterator here, but are you on Twitter or Facebook, and can people find you and follow you or friend you or something like that?
So nice of you to mention that. I am on Facebook. Under my name, Douglas Sidney. Care to take a look at more stuff than they would probably ever want to see? I have my website at douglassidney.com that's up.
Doug Sidney, you're fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Polly,
all.
You're always a joy.
Thank you.
And
thank
we
you.
We usually go around and the
someone,
circle.
Someone, I think, is definitely leading the best fire tender for the Versi this year. That's all I'm saying.
All right, so babe, go ahead, say.
So yeah, we go around the circle and everybody say goodnight in some way. Why don't we start with Paul?
Adios.
Muchas gracias y buenas noches.
Good night.
Oh, she took English. That was wonderful.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Good day, night, nay.
Sayonara.
Bona nocton.
Buona sera, everyone.
We do not have
We're leaving now. Turn off, turn
Is
off,
there a
turn off.
Erche?
Bye.
We would like to thank our guest, Doug Sidney, and our candle tender, the newest associate producer, Paul Hansen, and you for listening. A reminder for additional content, including special features, as well as more chat time with our guest, download the multi-part version of this podcast at SaintEuphoria.com. Also, like the Mimiverse Bonfire podcast on Facebook. It's a great way to ask questions and to stay in touch. Until next month, follow your path. Don't love your heroes so much that you cheat them of their due. And be sure to keep a rockin' and a rollin'.
The world like me, so scientifically, oh yeah. Oh yeah. A rockin', a rollin', all the way.
previously on Commander Lammet's Space Explorer. In space! After surviving mutants, monsters, missiles, and magma, Commander Lammet and his dutiful sidekick, Ruby, found themselves in an alien forest filled with poisonous greenery. Unaware of its lethal nature, Ruby, always the curious youngster, touched one of the plants and was instantly stricken by a slow-moving but deadly venom. To make matters worse, our heroes were ambushed in quick succession by three bounty hunters, all of whom seemed more interested in feuding amongst themselves as they took turns assassinating each other. Luckily, bounty hunter Nonas, the second mercenary to appear, administered an antidote to save young Ruby's life. However, the act was not one of compassion, rather of pure unadulterated greed, for, as the unlikely Florence Nightingale explained, though Commander Lammet and his sidekick were wanted dead or alive, Commander Lammet's nemesis, evil space king Kaxor, preferred them still breathing, and was willing to pay more to get it. Unfortunately, no good deed goes unpunished as Bounty Hunter Nonas was summarily executed by Captain Nad, a space pirate of questionable character but unimpeachable honor. We return to the action as Captain Nad demonstrates his commitment to honor by offering Commander Lammet a sporting and honorable chance to escape.
Since you brought up the concept of honor, I must honor my code as a space pirate and bounty hunter. I did not capture you honorably. Instead, I, in essence, stole you from another honorable bounty hunter, the late bounty hunter known as.
May she rest in peace.
Here's the deal. To make this a little more sporting, a little more honorable, I will give you a 15-second head start.
A 15-second start?
13 seconds.
What?
11, 10...
Run, Ruby! Into the forest!
Dear God!
8,
no.
7...
Run!
We're gonna die!
Don't just stand there screaming, Ruby. Run! Run like you're being chased by the klepstinkle beast of Relnak Prime!
I'm running! Oh my gosh! This is so hard! How do you effectively run through a forest filled with trees so deadly that a single touch of one leaf will poison and kill you? I mean, this is insane! What kind of all-knowing, all-powerful deity would come up with a tree that literally kills people with one touch? What mean and angry god thought this was a good idea? How in gosh darn flippity-flappity heck?
Ruby, I realize you're frightened beyond the capacity for rational thought, but there is never an excuse for such language. Besides, maybe if you talked less, you'd be able to focus more on the task at hand. That of trying to run away and not touch the deadly trees.
Sorry, Commander. Trying to focus and failing miserably.
You are forgiven, Ruby. In the future, when confronted by perilous situations such as this, it is a good idea to try to remember your Lammeteer training.
Really? Does that help?
It sure does. Ruby, what was the first and most important rule of every space explorer?
And space explorer in training.
And space explorer in training must remember.
Above all things, a Lammeteer's prime directive is to preserve and protect life at all costs. What was that?
Sounded like a massive explosion.
Oh no! Are evil Space King Kaxor's rocket ships back? Are they shooting at us again?
I do not see them.
Then where did that explosion come from?
I see it. Look, Ruby, back toward the clearing in which we were just standing with Captain Nad.
By Flargon's ghost, the clearing, it's gone.
Completely wiped off the map by some massively powerful weapon of some kind. In fact, it sounded vaguely similar to the standard weapons found on a space explorer's rocket.
Does that mean we're finally being saved? Good old Space Explorer Command! I knew we could count on you in a pinch. Wait, if the clearing is gone, wasn't Captain Nad still standing in that clearing?
I do believe he was, Ruby. I do believe he was.
That means we're safe! Captain Nad is gone and we can go to our rocket ship and get off this crazy planet and go home! Yippee!
But wait, what caused the explosion that killed Captain Nad? If it was from the weapons found on a standard Space Explorer rocket, we must investigate.
Nope. No way, Commander. We are not looking this gift horse in the mouth. Captain Nad is dead, and we are free to go back to our rocket ship and get off this crazy planet and go home. End of story.
Ruby, we must investigate. It is our duty to investigate.
No! We're going back to our rocket ship, and that is final!
Ruby, what is my rank?
What?
I ask you again, Junior Lammeteer, what is my rank?
Commander.
And what is yours?
Junior Lambenteer, Space Explorer in Training, Beta Class.
And does a Junior Lambenteer, Space Explorer in Training, Beta Class outrank a Commander?
No.
Then we will investigate. That is an order. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, Commander.
Good. Now, we investigate.
With Ruby sufficiently put in her place, Commander Lam and his plucky sidekick carefully make their way back to the clearing, or should I say smoking crater, where space pirate slash bounty hunter Captain Nat stood mere minutes prior. What they find is nothing but, well, a smoking crater. As the heroic pair stand on the edge of the scorched hole, Ruby provides her thoughts.
Wow, that is one big smoking crater.
It sure is, Ruby. It sure is.
Huh. Commander?
Yes, Ruby?
Why does everything suddenly look all shimmery and sparkly?
Excuse me?
It's a really weird feeling. It's all glittery and it's kind of like I'm disappearing.
Like you're disappearing? Ruby! Ruby! Where did you go? You did just completely disappear in the strange flash of shimmering light. Ruby, wait a minute. By Oxwork's chariot, I'm suddenly seeing stars. Odd, swirling, star-like shapes peeking and poking into and out of existence. What is happening?
Commander, are you okay? You just materialized right next to me and then fell on the floor.
Ruby, what? What happened?
Have no fear, Commander. You're finally safe.
Commander Lucent, are you a sight for sore eyes?
Commander Lucent, my old friend, I'm guessing we have you to thank for dispatching Captain Nat.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for saving us. Boy, am I glad to be off that planet and back on a fellow Space Explorer's rocket. But how did we get aboard your ship?
Transferal ray.
Transferal ray? Why, I've never heard of such a thing. What is it?
It's a little piece of technology I picked up during my adventures. It allows me to transport people and inanimate objects great distances using only a beam of energy. No need to even land!
Sounds useful!
It sure is, little Lambenteer. It sure is. And it's the only one of its kind.
Then it's a prototype? How did you get so lucky to get it installed on your rocket? Especially considering your past disagreements with Space Explorer Command.
Oh, I wouldn't call it luck, exactly.
What do you mean?
Let's just say I wasn't exactly given the technology so much as I borrowed it, indefinitely.
Which is a nice way of saying you stole it.
Yes. Yes, I did.
Dear God, no!
Commander Lucent, how dare you sully your uniform with such a brazen crime? I demand you relinquish your command at once and turn yourself over to me. And once you do, I will personally transport you to Space Explorer Command and see that you are granted a full and fair trial.
I don't think so, Commander Lambent.
Oh no! He has a ray gun, and it's pointed at us!
Don't worry, Ruby. I am also armed. Wait, no, I'm not. My ray gun was back in the clearing.
You mean the clearing on that awful planet that's now a big smoking hole in the ground?
Yes, that one.
All right, you two. Reach for the sky.
We're reaching, we're reaching!
Why, Lucent? Why would you steal from Space Explorer Command? I know you and Space Explorer Command haven't always seen eye to eye, but I never took you for a thief or a traitor.
I am not a traitor, Lambin. I am a patriot. Do you have any idea how corrupt Space Explorer Command really is? If you knew half of the things they don't tell us, you'd be on my side.
Never, Lucent. Never. I took an oath. You took an oath.
Yes. I took an oath. I swore fealty to an organization that, on the outside, seems like a shining beacon of hope in a turbulent universe, but on the inside is rotten to the core. Well, what's the point of blind loyalty to falsehoods and corruption? There isn't one!
Space Explorer Command is not corrupt simply because they don't agree with your ideas. Lucent, listen to yourself. You sound like a raving madman.
Yes, perhaps to someone as brainwashed as you I do. But that's neither here nor there. Since I am no longer employed by Space Explorer Command, I need money to survive.
Oh, man. Is that why you transported us to your rocket? Are you gonna sell us to evil Space King Kaxor for ransom money?
You're very receptive, Ruby.
And then what? You sell us to evil Space King Kaxor, and then what?
Then I raise myself a little army and, Using the power of my shiny new transfer array, I transfer array my soldiers into the heart of Space Explorer Command and literally destroy it from within. And once the members of the Governing Council are dead, I will install myself as the new leader and remake the Space Explorer Corps in my own image.
That can't be good.
No, Ruby, it cannot. Now, turn around slowly and start walking.
Walking? Where? Through that door in the back of the room?
Lucent, you can't be considering what I think you're considering. Yes, Commander. It's a long flight to evil space King Kaxor's palace, and I can't risk having you plotting to stop me.
Commander Lambin, what's he planning? What's through that door? And why do we need to go in there?
Ruby, that's a suspended animation chamber.
Suspended animation? What's that?
Suspended animation is defined as a temporary cessation of the vital functions. In this case, by using the chamber ahead to, in essence, freeze us.
Wait, he's gonna freeze us?
Yes, I am going to freeze you until I can safely turn you over to evil space King Kaxor and collect my reward money.
But I don't want to be frozen.
Ruby, it's all right. I will think of something.
But I do not want to be frozen like some weird lambeteersicle.
Ruby, you must stay calm.
Can't panicking going to scream.
As Commander Lem and Ruby are led at gunpoint toward the Rogue Space Explorer's high-tech meat locker, the situation appears grim. Will Space Explorer Command fall to the cold-hearted schemes of one of its own, or will our heroes avoid becoming human ice cubes and put traitorous Commander Lucent's dastardly plan in the deep freeze? Will they stop him? Can they stop him? Tune in next time to Commander Lem and Space Explorer in space to find out.